Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's a live broadcast from the press porch at Tanglewood. I'm Joe Donahue. This press porch is located in a grove of trees, a short walk from the famed shed where the world's greatest musicians are tuning up as we speak.
And I'm Alan Chartok. We're overlooking the Stockbridge Bowl almost, and it is difficult to believe we could broadcast from a more beautiful, important, or historic music setting. Joe, were you here when Robert Jay used to put the birds on live?
I was.
Yeah. Live. Live birds.
Yeah. Birds have agents?
They work very...
No, but they do have a union.
they work very cheap.
Good.
We start off this morning, as we always do, with our gracious host, Managing Director of the BSO, Mark Volpe, here to tell us about the amazing season ongoing at Tanglewood. He's our dear friend, and it's always... he makes us feel very much at home.
He does. We
thank him very much for that. Mark, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Big day for us, as we announced an extension of Andres Nelson's music director contract.
We're going to talk to him a little bit later on in the program. But so one of the questions we'll ask him, but I'll ask you this too, which is, so who went after who? Like, do you say, oh, we would like to make this a longer commitment from five years to 8 years? Or did he say, to do what I need to do, I need a longer commitment?
All of the above. But basically, you know, the first year, it's the metaphor is used as honeymoon, and in some dimensions it's sort of like a marriage, but it was clear there was chemistry with the orchestra first and foremost, chemistry with the audience, and then we start dreaming about what's possible and what we want to do, and we put together a three-pronged media approach in terms of electronic dissemination of musical content, which is a euphemism for recording. And we struck a deal with Universal on their most prestigious label, Deutsche Grammophon. We have our own label, and then I sat with the Google people, and we orchestrated a relationship with Google on the new media thing. So that kind of came together, and then we started looking at touring, and then basically when we kind of organize our media plans and our touring plans and our aspirations in terms of repertoire, it was clear we need to go beyond 5 years, and it was clear it was working, and so it was a very mutual thing. He and I started talking along with Tony Fogg and a few others involved in the artistic planning for the orchestra, and then there were these external forces like Universal, one of the three probably largest media companies in the world, and a few others. Google, which you probably heard of them, and they were very interested in the Boston Symphony with four other orchestras being their flagship orchestras. So ultimately, it made sense to kind of take the 5 years he had already committed and add three, and then beyond that, we just go into an evergreen relationship, which means we just keep on extending as long as both parties are happy.
Now, the orchestra was in on the hire, right? They have to be.
Well, the way the search works is there's an equal representation from the orchestra and the board, and then it's obviously staffed by Tony and me, and so they convened and met, and he was obviously the universal, maybe not obvious, but he was the unanimous and universal choice of the committee, and recommended to the trustees. Ultimately, the trustees, the fiduciaries, have the final say, and so we proceeded with Andres. And we commence a whole series of conversations. I go see him in Amsterdam and Berlin and London. He's obviously conducting the world's great orchestras. And it's a remarkable story when you start thinking about a kid growing up in the Soviet Union for 12 years. Obviously, the Soviets dominated the Baltic, and he somehow got educated. Actually, music is still very much part of the tradition in Latvia. I mean, you start thinking a little country like that, it starts with singing. I mean, and it's interesting. The Soviets took away, the churches and the synagogues. They basically mandated that, the Latvians speak Russian. But the one thing they didn't take away, and maybe there was some method to that, even Stalin, they had this tradition of every 3 or 4 years getting together in these big open spaces, amphitheater, and singing Latvian folk songs, and somehow you look at Latvia. I mean, Hitler and Stalin were trading it. Even before that, the Swedes and Norwegians. It hasn't been independent for very many years in the last 1,000 years. And you look at how they preserved their culture, their language, you know, their diet, their, you know, and it's just a strong, you know, group of people. There are probably 800,000-900,000 Lafians in Lafia with the, you know, forced repopulation. Stalin moved probably half a million plus Russians there. So the whole Baltic is a little bit complicated. In fact, one of the big geopolitical issues is the Putin is using his, frankly, financial power. There are a lot of he's trying to agitate the Russians that live in Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, and there's a lot of, you know, both in electronic media as well as print media agitation going on, and you know, the folks over there for good reason are a little bit nervous, albeit they're members of NATO, so it's a little different arrangement than what you had in Ukraine. How's that for a long-winded answer?
That was a great answer, by the way.
That was a really great answer.
You know, I love the fact that you are so smart, but that you hide your light under the bushel basket, and that you know, every once in a while, if we need a couple of extra, you know, words, you can bring stuff out. Have you ever asked him about his time under Soviet domination?
Oh yeah, I mean it's for 11, 12 years. His mother was an early music specialist, and early music was not part of the social realism that was the ideology of early music, new music, and so his mother was not particularly highly regarded by the communist folks who were situated in Latvia, you know, at the, you know, insistence of the Soviets in Moscow, and so it was not an easy time. That being said, at some point someone put a trumpet, you know, he was singing, of course,
the trumpet player.
Yeah, someone put a trumpet in his hands and something magical happened there, and music, there is, I mean, I don't want to be too unduly geopolitical, but the even in Soviet times, the Russians basically really value culture. You know, whether it's dance, you know, with the Bolshoi and Kirov, or whether it's music or visual arts, are a little bit more involved in terms of the precepts of social realism. But ultimately, yeah, you look at music was part of their education, whether they liked it or not. And so obviously, I mean, when you're a 6-year-old, you want to go kick a soccer ball. You don't necessarily want to play trumpet, but it was a phenomenal discipline. I mean, you know, Andras, like many conductors, has this remarkable ability to concentrate and focus, but also a discipline to study when other kids might be, you know, doing whatever other kids do.
Now, you're going on tour this year, of course. Tell us about that. It's fascinating. I mean, this is like bringing the Barnum and Bailey circus around, right? You have to get all of the...
Yeah, we're traveling with 115
without
musicians,
quite the cleanup crew.
About 40. Oh, there's a cleanup crew. It's a different type of cleanup.
Different type of cleanup.
There are about 40 board members that come with us. It's a phenomenal tour. We start, we're guests of the BBC. We play the London Proms and Royal Albert Hall. We then proceed to Salzburg, one of the great, great festivals of the world, and move on to Vienna, play an outdoor festival there. And then we move on to Lucerne Festival, which is something that Toscanini started when he couldn't go to Salzburg with Hitler's domination of Salzburg.
Very courageous.
Obviously, he started his own festival in so-called neutral Switzerland, he says sarcastically.
So-called.
Yeah. and ultimately, we then move on to, it's kind of a fun, we haven't played in my tenure at La Scala, so we're playing La Scala in Milan, and then we go on to Paris and play a new hall. I'll tell you a quick, you know, the new hall in Paris, open front page news everywhere, and the Nouvelle, the architect walked away because he just didn't think it was completed, and so they closed it, and they've been working on July and August, and then we're the first thing in there, I think September 2nd, 3rd, somewhere around there. The question I keep on asking people is no one actually works in France in August. So how is this thing going to get done? We'll find out.
You'll get a crowd.
And then we close in Cologne and in Berlin.
But they may all be Americans. The crowd may all be Americans who are in Paris.
Well, no, I think there's a pretty strong French following, actually going back to Ozawa days. Ozawa was incredibly popular in Paris and many other places. So I
that was a joke. Sorry about that.
You hit a nerve, obviously.
Sorry about that.
No.
Apologize.
Is it? Andras Nelson is a young guy. He's 36 years old. Married just a few years ago. Is it good from your point? And this is really, I guess, a psychological and sociological question of. Is it nice to start a career, and I assume you've seen this with Keith Lockhart, who's now celebrating his 20th year here, that you start with a young guy and it has its advantages?
it certainly has its advantages in terms of energy. And, you know, Andres really was a professional conductor at 19. So
right.
So we're catching him, you know, in his 15th year. I mean, this guy's been conducting
well, certainly very
Berlin and Vienna yeah. and London, Covent Garden and the Metropolitan Opera. And, you know, so it's not like, you know, we went to Odessa and said, hey, you come and conduct the Boston Symphony.
Right.
This guy is already, you know, world-renowned. And what's interesting in the world of conductors, and you have this incredible collection of great maestros that are now passing on in their 80s, going. I mean, we were very fortunate still to have Haitink and Dacchiani with us. And then you had people recently passed away, Sir Colin Davis, Lauren Mazel, Raphael Frubeck de Burgos, who I'm sure you had on your show
yeah,
once
here.
Or twice, yeah. And then that generation. And then you have this incredible collection of 30-year-olds, you know, obviously with our guy being in the lead, showing full bias, but you know, Dudamel in L.A. and the guy in Philadelphia. And then you sort of have a missing middle. You know, I haven't really fully understood. There's some wonderful 50 and 60 year old conductors. But I think what happened, you know, in the old days, the conductors had mentors. You know, when Bernstein or Koussevitzky would take Bernstein, and they would mentor. Mentor would take conductors and mentor. And with the advent of they invented this thing called the 747. So conductors, you know, instead of being in one continent for 39. Weeks or something, because you'd have to cross an ocean, would take a boat. Now you start thinking about what was in Europe in the 40s and 50s. Nothing until the Marshall Plan.
Sure.
You know, there was nothing in Europe, so everything was in the United States, and no one moved from the United States. Likewise in Japan. You know, until MacArthur. You know, obviously a controversial figure, but he's still an iconic figure in Japan. His office near the Imperial Palace is still one of the big shrines. You know, people forget that he took Japan, and in 46, and you know, after we obviously prevailed and built back Japan, but it took decades and decades. So everything was here, and now you can have a career on four continents. You can do Europe, North America, Asia, and even South America. And so there are fewer conductors actually mentoring young conductors, because they're just so busy and they're making money conducting. And so now it's sort of systems that create conductors. What Dudamel comes out of a system in Caracas, our guy comes out of an incredible, wonderful pedagogic system and out of, and the Baltic in Russia.
And yet, when you think about it, here he is at the greatest orchestra in the world. Is that what got him here? In other words, when you say you can make money, yeah, you can go. I'm not asking for obvious reasons how much they make, but they can go around.
You don't have to answer that, but just real quick, did he get a raise the new contract?
No, the first 5 years remained absolutely as initially guaranteed and promised, and then thereafter, of course, he got a little increment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll continue our conversation.
For the rest of the morning.
Right. Make everybody happy here. We'll take a break. We're talking to Mark Volpe, Managing Director of the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
The
boss, indeed. We are here at the press porch at Tanglewood. We'll return right after this short break.
Support comes from Alacrity Framework Shop, Lark Street, Albany, New York, offering custom framing and new exhibits every first Friday, open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956. Capital Wine, corner of State and Lark Streets in the heart of Albany, offering local, domestic, and international wines, spirits, and special orders. Tastings Friday, 6 to 9, capitalwinealbany.com. The Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area presenting the Hudson River Valley Ramble, featuring over 200 events throughout September, showcasing outdoor adventures, scenic landscapes, and regional history. HudsonRiverValleyRamble.com. And New York's Ensemble for the Romantic Century, returning to the Berkshires with Van Gogh's Ear, an original theater concert, complementing the Clark's Van Gogh exhibit August 20th through 30th. RomanticCentury.org for tickets.
Welcome back to the Roundtable's live broadcast from Tanglewood on Parade tonight, which you can find out more information by going to tanglewood.org. Our guest for this morning and our host for the entire morning, Managing Director of the BSO, Mark Volpe, who we've been talking with. And I guess I'm curious as to how did Tanglewood on Parade begin?
I think the thinking was there are all these elements of Tanglewood. There's the high school program that Boston University runs in association with us. There's this incredible school that's created the great geniuses, the Zubin Mehtas and Seiji Ozawas and Leonard Bernsteins of the world. And then there's all this chamber music and the BSO, of course, and the Pops. And so I think the thinking was you bring it all together and one day, and you have from 2 o'clock on, there's every venue has something going on. So and then you add a family element. They're you know, face painters. We used to have a monkey and an organ really? Grinder, but the monkey retired. I think I haven't checked our pension list lately, but I have a feeling the monkeys. I probably should check
get
that.
Get a monkey on the pension.
But there's so many other things for kids to do here, and then it all culminates. And I think one of the great oddities that one of the great celebratory pieces in America, we do it July 4th on the Esplanade for 500,000 people, and then we do it here to celebrate Tanglewood on Parade, is 1812, you know, Tchaikovsky's sure. 1812 Overture, which has nothing to do with America, has everything to do with Kutuzov and Napoleon and Wellington and cannons and all of that. So anyhow. We have it's very. I'll tell you one quick story. The first time we did this, you know, we have the cannons here, and they're sort of simulated, and they make big noise. We did it in a big public park in Baltimore. And it's sad story actually when you start thinking about it. But when people hear things go bang in Baltimore, everyone hits the ground. I mean, had the entire audience. It was the same. You learn your lessons.
And sings the Star Spangled Banner. Of course.
Yeah. But the other American piece really it is American, and that's Stars and Stripes. And you start thinking about Stars and Stripes. We did it. The first orchestra to play in the Soviet Union in history was the Boston Symphony in 1956. And I was with another orchestra, and we were invited, maybe the 10th orchestra, to go to Russia. And we were doing all our encores, and we finished with Stars and Stripes, because that was the only thing left in the book to play, and I just do it because that's what the American thing. And the next morning, there's a knock on my door, and it's two officials from Gosconcert and Foreign Ministry, and I get hauled in to Moscow, this undescript, you know, building with no windows, and interrogated why we shoved the flag down. And we wouldn't even, you don't even think about Stars and Stripes as the why. I guess naively, I didn't consider that. It was too late when it happened.
The CIA was not paying.
I was the culture attaché, and someone else from the embassy got me out of there. I was sat there for 3 hours in a Russian interrogation of sorts. I mean, they didn't. You know, there's no torture involved, though. Although I hadn't had breakfast, but otherwise it was. You know.
You know, Joe, for a contribution of a couple of $100 to the. To the WAMC, whatever, you can come to the Chartok bathroom because we have a 1940, Rosella's got a 1940 Tanglewood on Parade thing on the wall, and a signed Koussevitzky, in which Koussevitzky has his finger, not that finger, up in the air, and you know it's
and you have this in your bathroom.
We do.
Okay.
With the,
enough
with
said.
The obvious consequences.
Yes. Okay. Glad to know where we stand.
when you look forward, so after this, you obviously, Andres will be doing five more concerts, I think?
Yeah, five
more. And then you'll be on the road.
That's true, and then the Pops stays here. Pops with Keith does a fantastic circus show. I'm actually glad to be in Europe because it scares the hell out of me. There are these incredible guys, like Cirque du Soleil kind of guys, that are up suspended over the audience and the orchestra and juggling and all these phenomenal things.
Who does all of that?
And then these circus folks.
But you worry about a Spider-Man kind of event, right?
I'm going to be in Europe, so
we're at the rehearsal for one of these, and it's fascinating because they start coming out over the audience. Yeah. They look like they're going to take out the entire woodwind section.
I'm glad to be in Europe, and then the next night we have a film night, and obviously we'll be playing the music of John Williams. And John, unfortunately, is a horrendous back. and is not able to travel, and so he's missing his first Tanglewood and Prairie in 35 years. But well, Andres Nelsons is going to come and do his first Star Wars, which
I thought that was great. And he's doing, we should mention, and conducting the 1812.
Yeah, and he's going to do the 1812, which it's kind of his core. Well, he has so much repertoire, but it's right dead center for him, and Slavic repertoire is sort of what you grew up with if you're in Lafayette.
Well, for more information on Tanglewood, you can go to tanglewood.org. And, of course, Tanglewood on parade tonight. As Mark mentioned, the main gate and things begin at 2 o'clock, and there are activities throughout, beginning with the, beginning at 2, and then, of course, culminating with the gala concert in the shed at 8:30.
You have Tom Rolfe coming up, who is one of the greatest trumpet players in the world. Anything you want to know about mouthpieces, he will be able to tell you.
Bach 7C.
I'm sure Alan has many
Jamie's
questions
here.
About.
Yeah, he also uses a mouthpiece. It's a different kind of mouthpiece, but
we have the principal of form and the principal trumpet coming up next. Mark Volpe, always a pleasure to have you here on the program. Thank you very much. Again, for more information, tanglewood.org. You're listening to the Roundtables live broadcast from Tanglewood from WAMC.